Right, we're all here, and everything's more or less working, and I've got some pink headphones on. So it's time to introduce series podcast... Hang on. It's time... Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, listeners.
Happy New Year,
2014.
And, yeah, what a exciting new year this promises to be.
In many, many ways.
We even have an extra guest podcaster here. It's Nick Veitch. He's back.
The awesome Nick Veitch. Welcome to my house.
Thank you.
Right, now that we're all here and in the same room, apart from Mike, who is coming live from Vienna, it's time to start
Scott.
Linux Voice Podcast Series 2, Episode 1. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Nick Veitch.
I'm Mike Saunders.
Excellent. We still remember who we are, even after the New Year's excess. This podcast is brought to you from Linux Voice. We're going to have a melange of content, including news, discoveries of the week. Let's change that now to finds of the fortnight.
Yeah.
It's snappy. It's alliterative. It was suggested by a reader. We will go back through the podcast notes and actually credit him or her. There's Absolutely. A wheel of misfortune.
Yeah, I suggested adding that because it was fun and we got fed up with it, but it's been a while now, so maybe we can bring it back.
This is an old feature that we used to use on the old podcast that we used to do, but we're bringing it back. And there's a halfway reminder to come, which is always my favourite section. Localise your neurons, the challenge report, and voice of the masses all packed into the next action-filled 45 minutes. If you like the sound of that and you want to subscribe... to something
that's shocking,
something like this podcast but on paper or on electrons, you can do so at the shop, which is
which shop is that
it's not a great shop.
It's not a great shop.
We need to do some work on the shop.
It's a functional shop. It's shop.linuxvoice.com, and you can buy digital subscriptions, print subscriptions, 12-month and 6-month subscriptions, and
action figures.
Sadly, not. We're still getting the 3D printers sorted.
And actually, I was going to ask Nick if he wanted to write something on 3D printing. So maybe that's an opportunity to do some 3D scanning and
print your own mic. Yeah. It'll be like the dartboard that we
did. That's what we need.
Actual size.
Could make a Richard Stallman action figure.
That would be cool.
A Richard Stallman action figure where if you pull,
that would actually
pull a string out of the back and then it says a series of phrases.
Yeah.
Keep this idea secret from our competitors.
Shh. Tell no one. Okay. Keep it secret, keep it safe, and let's start, shall we? What's new? What's new, Ben?
Let's go. The news. Oh, so much is new over the pack. It's been more than a fortnight this time, almost a month. The top item news is Linux is even more popular than it's ever been at the moment. According to netmarketshare.com, which is a website that sort of tracks, it based sort of desktop market share on visits to websites. So it's a bit dodgy, their figures. They're not 100% accurate. But they reckon Linux is now 1.78% of the desktop worldwide, which is about 40% higher than it was last year.
Percentage increases are great, aren't they?
Yes.
We at our old company, they were always very keen to tell us percentage increases in Facebook likes.
We got a huge surge of Facebook likes just before Christmas, didn't we, Ben?
Oh, we were up. I think it was 65,000% over a week.
Still a 40% increase.
Yeah, and that's on top of about a 60% increase last year. I mean, it's gone up from sort of under 1% to... not far off 2% in a couple of years, which is actually really good. I mean, we can sort of joke about it being really small numbers, but it's significantly growing.
Yeah.
I wonder if a lot of this...
Go ahead, Mike.
I should probably signal something. I wonder if a lot of this is due to the NSA revelation. So people have actually started exploring non-proprietary software or software that's not from big evil megacorps.
Yeah, there's probably quite a few things coming into it. Obviously, Raspberry Pis, there's 2 million of them around. That's going to chunk up a bit. 2.3 million of them around. Mm-hmm. It'll also, the big question mark is over Chrome OS. They don't say how they count that, but it's assumed to be lumped in with the Linux numbers, which probably accounts
They've
for
They've been selling really well, haven't they?
Yeah.
The point I wanted to make simply was, I think these figures are almost irrelevant now, because a lot of desktop work now happens in the cloud or using cloud-related products. People are actually using Linux on their desktops, even though they're not running Linux as their desktop OS.
Hang on, don't you work for one of the country's leading cloud providers?
Do I? cloud enablers.
Brought to you by Pravda this week.
No, but it's true. Most people now use all sorts of applications on through a web interface, which are usually running on Linux or Unix backend somewhere. So you could almost argue that almost 100% of the desktop market is Linux based these days.
Or you could ask whether, you know, is this the year of the desktop? Is a relevant question to still keep asking.
You could.
Well, hold your horses there, you two, because we'll be coming to that in the voice of the masses. Yeah.
But I think the one point about this that's really relevant is it's something to go and beat hardware manufacturers with to show them that there is a real user base here that wants support and that, you know.
Is there any breakdown of that 1.78% in terms of distributions and things like that?
No.
Right.
Steam OS as well.
Yes, at the moment that's probably pretty tiny.
That's tiny, yeah. But over the next couple of years we can expect that to grow massively. And that's having an effect on hardware.
Will it have an effect on those figures, though? Because the figures are based on how many times you visit Facebook, and I imagine people aren't... Yeah. Well, things like
that's nonsensical.
It is nonsensical. Lots of these things are nonsensical.
Sensible people don't go on Facebook, do they, Mike?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So things like the Steam console, which would be Linux-based and you would be running Linux on it, you're only likely to use Steam on, so therefore lots of these systems won't actually count that as an installation of anything, in fact, because it won't ever, in all likelihood, visit any of the websites that matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, it is a fairly nonsensical way of counting it, but in a certain way, it's the least nonsensical way of counting it, because there isn't a good
the
way.
The least nonsensical way would be to go around and visit everybody on the planet and ask them.
But by the time you've asked everybody, the people that you started with have changed their mind.
And some of them have probably died.
Yeah.
Moving on to something we talked about a bit there, Steam. Steam OS. Steam machines have been announced. 13 models.
13?
13.
Is this new news from CES or something?
Yes, this was last night.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent work.
Not last night.
Well, we're recording this on the Wednesday, yeah.
So there's 13 models, a baker's dozen, starting at about $500 and going up to $6,000.
Oh, wow.
That's like the top model with the top option sort of thing. So there's a massive range.
Sensible.
Yeah. So, I don't know, what do we think about this? Most of the models come in at around $1,000 or a bit more for one that you could really play games on, that could be considered competing with a console.
A new company selling Linux machines? It's a brilliant thing. It's brand new territory as well.
Yeah, I mean, what's good to see is some of the big names. Alienware are making them, Gigabyte.
You know. Alienware's Dell as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course you can build your own because they've made it clear what actual hardware you need or, you know, what's going to be supported. So you can build your own and install your own.
And we spoke last time, I've got it running on a machine underneath the television over there, and it's a lovely interface. It really makes you feel like you're using a console. And I think there are some pretty obstinate PC gamers who don't want to move to consoles, and this offers like the perfect kind of benefit of both sides for them. Yeah. And it's Linux.
Yeah. I think one way you can look at it is when you talk about $600-700 for a games console, which is what, probably $200-300 more than a regular games console.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit. But I'm not a gamer, but I have probably 25 or 30 games in my library.
Yeah. And you won't need a £700 PC to play those, probably, if they're off the Humble Bundle or something.
Yeah. But it just means that I get it, I've got a load of games to start with.
Yeah.
I'm not having to pay £50 a game
to get started. So that's a massive incentive. If I was going to get one, and I don't know if I will get a console, but if I was, I'd get a SteamOS one just because I've got that. And when I decide to upgrade, I keep all my games. I don't have to rebuy them all.
What's the? Is there some? What kind of shape? I haven't seen anything about this. Is there some kind of form factor that they have to adhere to, or are they just PCs that are kind of verified to run SteamOS?
Not full details of them have been announced, to be honest. It's all sort of some people have given the hardware specifications. As far as I'm aware, there's no specific shape or anything. It's just, hardware that will run SteamOS. I don't know if they pay something to Steam and get a little logo on it or something.
That's brilliant. We must try and get hold of one or two.
Yeah.
Or 13.
Yes, that would be great.
I volunteered to do a roundup for you.
you can do it. You can get in touch with 13 manufacturers. And
the first are due to launch. I think some of the first due to launch in the first quarter, but most of them not until later in the year.
I'd be very tempted to get one as well. I mean, yes. But we're not paying ourselves any money yet.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm holding off on all purchases.
Maybe wait a while.
Yeah.
My right shoe's got a big hole in it.
Has it?
Yeah.
My the plastic on my glasses has come off here, and that's why I've taken them off. Hard times.
You put them back on when you're driving, though, don't you? Listeners,
we can't afford petrol.
Still, I've got an Nexus 5.
Onto our third item of news. Red Hat have said they're going to start. Well, they've said a lot of things. They said basically going to give more support to CentOS, which is obviously an open source distribution based on the source code for Red Hat. And it's not exactly clear what they mean, and because they've never.
Well, one thing they want to do is Red Hat actually wants to employ some CentOS people. But these CentOS people will not work on Red Hat Enterprise Linux. They said they're going to remain behind this firewall. So they will carry on working on CentOS, but they will be employed by Red Hat. And that's quite a big shift, given, Red Hat's previous relationship with CentOS. Beforehand, Red Hat said, we don't want CentOS.
Yeah, they hardly ever accepted its, existence, did they, for a long time? Mm.
Exactly, yeah. But this is interesting because it's in... I mean, Red Hat wants people to be buying Red Hat Enterprise Linux subscriptions, but it's in their interest that people use CentOS more than, say, Debian, because at least if you're running CentOS, you might at some point buy a Red Hat support subscription. So maybe it's a bit like, Microsoft used to tolerate piracy of Windows because it's better to have people pirating Windows and maybe buying it one day than moving to Linux.
I think it's a step. It's one of those thawing steps forward where there's a change in that. Well, there's probably been a change in attitude a few years ago at Red Hat. CentOS is a fantastic thing to have happened. It brings all the stability of RHEL to everybody, and a lot of people use it on their, cloud servers and things for normal everyday storage. So it's just good that Red Hat see the advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what changes. Hopefully, it will allow them to bring in the updates quicker, because there's always been a slight delay, particularly with security updates. I mean, not a long delay, a day or two. And they've got better in recent years, so hopefully it'll help them do that quicker. Obviously, it's good if Red Hat...
And they've got... CentOS has a really shiny new website as well now, I just noticed before.
I remember on the old one, I always used to click on the wrong download link that took you to the website for the company that mirrored it, not the download link.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next news item. Not Linux-based, but obviously very technologically important. The UK's porn filter has come into place.
Oh, yes. I wondered what was happening.
So, for those of you not in the UK, on any new internet connection, I believe, you will have an adult filter enabled by default, and this blocks everything from nudie videos to... Well, it blocked the Code Club website as well, didn't it, at one point?
It blocked a Doncaster Children's Services website. Or
various rape crisis
helplines. The NSPCC as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But all sorts of things. As everybody predicted beforehand.
Of course. debt awareness charities. Of course, Wonga have given lots of money to the Conservative Party recently, but that's a massive coincidence.
Massive coincidence.
I feel a lot
given
safer.
Or lent at
2,500. I just can't help get the feeling it was deliberately bungled just to show how bad an idea it was.
Right. Well, is anything going to change as a consequence, though?
There's some IT contracts working for the government thinking, I can't believe they're asking me to do this. He's deliberately done a rubbish job.
Well,
is that what had happened to the Badger colour as well?
They make a mess of that.
Just a badger with a fake wig and spectacles sat there planning. Because, I mean, adult filters have been around for decades. Well, at least a couple of decades. And then it's always been a difficult thing to get right. But there's ways in place of doing it better than this has done.
Yes.
And this has been handled spectacularly badly. And it is possible that it is just pure incompetence.
How do you opt out of it?
I believe you have to, well, it would depend on your ISP, but you have to sort of phone them up or fill out a form or something like that, I think.
Tick a box that says, I want to see lots of adult pornography.
Show me the boobies.
I am over 18, honestly.
I don't understand why these things aren't opt-in. I understand that there are a million parents out there who don't understand what their kids are doing, and so they're taking the decision out of their hands. But if it was made clear to them, you know, do you want this option or do you not want this option? Why isn't it done that way?
I don't know, but I think the bigger danger is, as we've seen, as we suspected, and as you know, anyone could guess, the filter system doesn't really work. I think the real danger is people assume, oh, now I'm protected because this filter is in place, there's no need for me to monitor what
my kids
are doing because the government is looking after me.
Yes.
But obviously that isn't really the case.
And if ISPs actually worked to create a good filtering system, say, for example, they could block social networking sites during a few hours when the children are supposed to be working, doing their homework and things like that. So the parents actually had control over what was coming through, what was not, and they could decide, they could shape the way the filters should work. You know, it could be done well, but just blanket doing it with an incredibly inefficient filter is not the way to go around.
Well said.
So, going from blocked stuff to unblocking stuff, torrents, accessing naughty things online. You might be able to help us out on this one, Nick. Apparently, Ubuntu is incorporating a torrent search in the...
Is it?
In the Unity.
A lens for torrents.
That sounds like a great idea.
So, Ubuntu users can download the latest Fedora release.
Or Windows.
Or an old Windows release.
Yeah.
Well, why not?
I know it's tempting to believe that all major decisions at Canonical come through me, but really they don't.
Yeah, I suppose it isn't much of a story, really. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, they've got ways for search for all sorts of other things. Why not just add a torrent thing?
I'm sure it's not just at the Pirate Bay that they're offering torrent searches off.
Well, it's hard to see how they could do the Pirate Bay, given that for all their British customers, that would be blocked and they're a British company and they would, I don't know, unless they're just trying to get someone to argue with them to get some news coverage.
Mm. I mean, as I say, I wasn't completely aware of this particular amazing story, but I would really like... I'd like it to be... BitTorrent has been associated too much with piracy and it has been tarnished. I remember working at a particular company that banned BitTorrent, blocked all BitTorrent access because some people might use it to download things that they shouldn't do. And this was a major obstruction to me downloading lots of Linux distros, some of which at the time were only available on BitTorrent.
Yeah.
There are loads of legitimate uses for BitTorrent.
It's sometimes the only way you can get something.
Yes.
You know, if you're an individual and you've created a distribution, there's no way that you can fund the bandwidth required for that.
No. So there are honest, legitimate uses for BitTorrent, and it shouldn't always be assumed that because someone wants to access something by BitTorrent that they're necessarily, you know, stealing something off someone.
Yeah.
Good work, Nick. thanks for bringing torrents to Ubuntu.
And more Ubuntu news you might be able to help us with. Apparently Wi-Fi keys are being stored in plain text.
That's horrendous.
That's terrible.
Oh, that's
cavalier with people's secures.
I believe this is related to the network manager thing, configuration thing, which I actually abhor and I think have probably removed from from my desktop. So it's nice that everyone immediately criticizes Ubuntu, but I think it's all distros which use that particular configuration tool.
Yeah.
And wasn't that configuration tool created by a distro?
It may have been created by someone related to, I think Fedora was the first one to use it, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it was.
I mean, yeah.
It's a widely used tool. This just seems like another piece of FUD to me, because although on the face of it, it seems really bad. Ooh, there's a password to my Wi-Fi setup stored in plain text on my machine. As far as I understand, the only way to actually access that is if you have root access to the machine anyway, or some access to the file system. And that seems like more of a major security hole to me than someone finding out your Wi-Fi password. If someone can access your machine to read the password in the first place, then they can do all sorts of other things anyway. So I'm not sure it's such a big deal, and I believe there are various things in place to stop it from happening. In the meantime, should you be terrified, lying awake in bed at night, worrying that someone might accidentally be able to access, break into your house, access your computer, find out your Wi-Fi password, and steal some of your bandwidth, then I'm sure you could encrypt your disk or do all sorts of other things to prevent that happening. Lock the door, maybe.
And that's the news.
Great news, Ben. Thanks for that.
Hurrah.
So, find of the fortnight.
Yeah,
I got it right. I got it right.
Fortnight.
It's been a hectic fortnight. It's been like a few days of downtime, and then all the rest of it. I haven't spent that much time with Linux. Somebody else want to go first?
I've got some finds this fortnight. The first one, we've all been there. You're at work, you're a bit bored, you're maybe hungover, you can't really be bothered to work, so you're doing something up.
You're sacked.
And you have some window minimise you can just alt-tab to in case your boss walks past. What do you have? Maybe a file, something that looks like you're doing busy work. Hackertyper.com is what you need. If you open it, just bash keys, and it just prints out code as though you're typing it. It's fantastic. All you have to do, put on your sunglasses to hide your bleary eyes from the night before, and mash the keyboard, and it looks like you're a leak coder bashing out lines of code every second.
And what does the code actually do? Have you?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I think it's
so when someone comes over and asks you, "Oh, that looks really interesting. Hey, explain this bit for me."
You could say anything. It's just
generating entropy.
Yeah.
No boss that we've ever had would ever ask a question in that sort of level.
Well, this is
hang on a minute.
It's in green on black, so it looks proper cool.
I used to work for Severn Trent, which in the UK is a water authority, it used to be. I wrote a script in QBasic on a DOS machine at the time that timed me typing in all the letters of the alphabet just so that I could sit there. And I got really, really good at it. I can't remember my high score, but I would sit there actually just timing how quickly I could do this. Really simple script, but it made me look like I was working and concentrating. It was great.
Meanwhile, millions of gallons of water were dripping away.
720 is still in existence, so I won't say too much. But yeah, they used their full sickness allocation there, that's for sure. That was before it was privatised.
So you're actually stealing from the state?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Good work.
Yeah. So more fines. Ooh. It's an interesting... I didn't know where to put this in news on my fines, but I guess it's really neither, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. The Kali Linux developers, it's a penetration testing distro, testing a feature where it's got a separate password that if you type it in, it nukes your disk.
Ah.
Just blanks everything. So the idea is if you're held up by bad guys or...
drug lords.
Yeah, or... immigration, police.
Or Colombian drug lords.
Yes, sorry.
We don't stereotype Mexico.
Sorry, Effie.
And they say, enter the password. You know, big baseball bat head. You can enter the password and it's all gone.
That's awesome.
And then they beat you to the
power. This is the thing. My first thought was, that's awesome. And then I thought, well, actually, any situation where you could use it, it's just going to make matters worse.
It needs to create a kind of realistic home folder or something.
Yeah.
There's nothing here.
Just little My Little Pony background.
These aren't the droids you're looking for. Yeah.
That's great. That's really cool.
I don't know. Because if the two situations are basically some bad guys are wanting to do you harm, or you're being held up, it's like in the UK under Section 7, like David Miranda was, where you're legally obliged to provide passwords and you're not allowed a lawyer.
That's a very good point.
But if you gave them this password, it's not going to end well for you, is it?
No.
I mean, I don't know what you should do in that situation, but this, giving them a password which wipes all your folders is probably going to make matters worse. I don't know.
I suppose you could make the two passwords very similar.
So you accidentally mistype it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, under the high-pressure situation under which you put me, I accidentally made a mistake.
Yeah, or another option someone suggested on Reddit is just tape the incorrect password to your machine with password this. So you go, I'm not going to tell you the password. You did it, not me. Again, it's probably not going to end well. But
that's a great discovery.
But it's an interesting idea, cool. Anyway.
But it'd have to be in Spanish. It'd have to be password OS.
Lost password. Yeah. Something else I discovered. I discovered this a couple of months ago, but it came up the other day, and it's actually a really handy thing. If you've got an Android 4 device and a Linux machine, if you plug it in, you don't usually just get straight access to the files and whatnot on it like you used to with Android 2. Because it uses MTP rather than, I think it was USB mass storage before. But GoMTPFS is a program that just gives you access to the files on your Android device. Mounts them as a file system. I think it uses Fuse. Works great. I've got this vague recollection, actually, that when I did this on Unity and Ubuntu, I didn't need anything extra. It just mounted it.
I'm sure it does. They do all sorts of magic, strange, useful things in Ubuntu.
They do indeed.
The final thing I found, you may have noticed, the Linux Voice website went down. Was it earlier this week or last week?
It was Saturday.
Saturday. Our hosting company is based in Gloucester, in the west of England. It's unfortunately situated on a floodplain, which probably isn't the best place to locate a hosting company. But anyway.
Stupid Romans.
Yeah. the flood's been really bad. The flood's always really bad in Gloucester, but it's been particularly bad. And the time our host went down coincided with the Severn Bore, which is a type of tidal wave that affects very few rivers. And the Severn's one, the Amazon's another. When you have two rivers coming together at the same mouth and the phase of the moon and you slaughter a white cock, this wave comes up the river. And we don't know because we haven't had any information at all about what caused it. We don't know that that's what caused it, but I like to think it was the phases of the moon that took down our website.
The fast host raft.
Some surfer going a bit too fast on the boor. Well, they were to invest in some sort of boat, I think, and put the
servers
on a boat. Yeah. Yes.
That's what Blackadder would do.
It's what Google are doing.
Yeah, yes.
And those are my finds.
Excellent. Thanks, Ben.
Finds, Ben.
Do you want to have a go, Mike?
Yes, I'll give it a go because I've got two discoveries. I mean, findings of this fortnight / 3 weeks. The first one is Suicide Linux. And this is... it's a few years old, this, so some people might have heard of it before. And it's a package that you can install. And then after that, anytime you make a typo at the command line, whether you type in a non-existent command or a non-existent file or directory, it automatically runs rmrf slash. So it's only particularly useful, well, dangerous, I guess, if you're running as root. And I believe now with modern versions of core utils, it actually prevents that from happening. If you run rmrf slash, it actually says something else, doesn't it?
Yeah, you have to use the no preserve root option if you really want a knackier system.
I can't let you do that, Dave.
That's a tense of robot voice, but I won't use it.
So maybe they need to update it now for that. I thought it was an interesting idea that even just a non-existent path or file name could cause this to happen. So maybe we could all use this as a challenge at some point.
That's a good idea, yeah.
And just leave blank pages in Linux voice. Wiped out sections.
It's sort of the equivalent of driving your car with a giant metal spike in the middle of the steering wheel, isn't it?
And the second find I had, I was browsing Reddit, the Linux subreddit, and somebody posted a screenshot of kwrite or kedit running on Wayland. And I looked at the screenshot, and on the wallpaper it said it was from Rebecca Black Linux, if anyone remembers that.
Yes, I remember that. Rebecca Black OS.
Yeah, exactly. It turns out the people are using this because...
Because it uses Wayland.
It has Wayland really well integrated. And people were talking about changes on the Rebecca Black SVN and stuff like that. I thought it was just a joke distro, but apparently now it's one of the best ways to get really good Wayland support.
Isn't there also a Justin Bieber Linux that uses Mia?
Ooh. This is almost a roundup.
Stupid Linux distribution.
I think they all have more users than MicOS.
Look, just because I don't have a famous singer behind my operating system.
Mike, yet. Mike, does MicOS store any passwords in plain text?
No, it doesn't support anything.
Store anything.
I might incorporate some really advanced encryption technology like ROT13, though.
Are there any network vulnerabilities in MicOS?
If somebody gets a serial cable and wraps it around your neck, then yeah, probably. So those are my finds / discoveries of the triple Vocker. Bye.
Ask as I can, thank you, sir, Mike.
I had a discovery. It's quite a boring discovery.
No, don't start like that. Just brings us down.
Managing expectations.
Okay, let's just skip over it.
Fine.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, it was interesting to me because it's the first time I've ever found a use for having two screens. I actually have four screens, but I only ever use one of them because, like most people who have been using Linux for years, I got used to virtual desktops. Whenever I ever want to do something on another screen, then I just switch to the other screen because I'm too lazy to turn my head that way or that way. And it's just nice. And I never even think about it. Because how often do you really... It's useful to have two things open at the same time, but how often do you really need to see them both at the same time? But then I discovered brackets. Brackets is a tedious, it's not tedious, but it does a tedious job. It's an HTML editor. I edit a lot of HTML, and it's really nice. It has a nice, consistent, easy to use interface. It looks nice on the screen. It's easy on the eye. It does all the things you want it to do. You can type things in, you can do all the usual sorts of things you can do in an HTML editor. The best thing about it is it's written in a combination of JavaScript and something, and it uses HTML technologies embedded within it, and it also provides a live preview, which a lot of things, a lot of editors I've used don't. I
mean, yeah,
usually
yeah.
there's some preview function where you can press a button and it'll load up a new window. But this will actually do a live preview in, I think it only works with Chrome at the moment.
But so as you type, it appears in Chrome?
As you type, yeah, basically it just refreshes the screen quite aggressively.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can type things in and see with that. So it actually really works. And if you spend a lot of time editing HTML and CSS and stuff like that, it's really useful, and is a justification for having two screens. Now I don't feel so bad about having loads of. Well, I don't. I acquired them in the way that you usually acquire these things. I bought a new screen that was slightly better than the one that I had.
Yeah, yeah.
So the one just got moved sideways somewhat. But now it's useful. So that was my discovery.
Don't know why, but as you're speaking, I got this urge to buy four screens and mount them in a square and put a motor in the middle. So when you switch virtual desktops, you
change the brand. Yes,
or the seat, do you mean? Like in the Millennium Falcon. Yeah. Shall I do my discoveries?
Yeah.
Well, I very modest discoveries. That's how you traditionally start your discoveries. I've discovered that because I'm writing something on the Brew Pie for the first issue of Linux Voice, which is a way of climate controlling your fridge or freezer to be able to brew beer in it. Somebody very generously gave me a freezer. But the shelves are made out of the pipes that contain the coolant, which doesn't leave enough room to get your bin in there. And I've discovered that pipes made to contain coolant are actually easy to bend. You don't have to be too scared. I was a bit worried I was going to get covered in coolant spilling out of the freezer, but the bending went really well. So that's the first step out of the way. Another discovery I've got is, we've been working a lot on IRC because we're all working from different places. And there's something I discovered this morning, in fact, is that we're all logging on and logging off at different times. And unless you keep a kind of persistent session going through SSH, you lose what other people have said. So I've been looking into a way of solving that problem. And there's something called the BIP IRC proxy, which basically runs on... You can run it locally if you don't have control of the IRC server. But you run it, it connects, you can connect to the proxy and it sends you all of the stuff you've missed, as well as manage your connection. So other people can connect to the BIP proxy as well.
Is that why the admin users suddenly appeared?
Oh, well, the admin is my persistent SSH session that I always keep going so that I can skip through any conversation that's been missed, yeah. But so we could all use the BIP proxy. Once it's up and running, you can log on to your account through the BIP proxy on the same server. And then whenever you log on, it'll send you the stuff that you've missed.
So is this like, what do they call them, an IRC bot?
Yes, yeah, it is.
Okay. Well,
no, I don't think it is, sorry, no.
So you don't connect to...
Oh, yeah, that's it, it's a bouncer.
But you connect to it through your IRC session.
It's distinct from a bot. It connects to your IRC session and you connect to it.
Ah.
So it manages its own kind of user access, and then it's a proxy.
Yeah, okay.
And then the final discovery is really about BBC iPlayer access over Christmas. For the first time, was on tablets more than desktops. So many millions of people catch up on Christmas television in the UK through iPlayer. And this Christmas, 2013, it's been the first year where tablets have overtaken desktops. Which really ties into what we were saying in news about what constitutes Linux, what is a desktop, and is the question still relevant? But I think it's an interesting mark where desktops, they definitely have their uses, but they're not the same general purpose PC computing devices that they have been for our lives.
Yeah. Did it say whether they'd overtaken laptops?
No, it didn't, but I think laptops are included in desktops, so yeah.
Oh, well, okay.
I've actually got my phone here with the cache data on it, but... Yeah, so mobile and tablet devices accounted for 72% of BBC sports traffic on Boxing Day.
That's a load of blokes round their in-laws house.
Yeah, with their phones. but that's what technology's become.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just that 72% of internet traffic to the BBC sports thing. Maybe that is like the spurious statistic.
Well,
90% of our laws are made up in Brussels rather than Westminster, when they're just in fact amendments to trade treaties about the curviness of bananas.
Well, yeah, it's
true. Important things are decided in Westminster. Maybe somebody just checking a tweet update once to see if Manu have equalised is a visit, and then watching a full match on a telly on iPlayer is another visit.
Yeah, possibly. And the most popular TV programme on iPlayer is Doctor Who. And so you're going to assume, I suppose, that most people that are watching Doctor Who are going to be people watching it with tablets.
Yes.
Or Call the Midwife, for example, is number three.
Right.
So, yes, I suppose the obvious trend is that, yes, desktops are becoming increasingly irrelevant for normal, everyday people. Maybe people won't even have one. I know my sister's talking about just not having a computer and getting a keyboard for her Galaxy Tab.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe one day there'll be an operating system that runs across all devices. Someone should really do that.
Maybe all the interfaces could converge.
Hmm.
To create one interface to rule them all.
Oh, yeah, and one thing we didn't talk about in news was that WebOS, remember Palm's a wonderful OS, which was bought by LG, the television company, and do many other things besides. They say 70% of all of their smart TVs in 2014 are going to be running WebOS, which seems ideal to me.
Hmm.
Having got a smart TV and their awful user interfaces, you know, if WebOS can have a second life as something like that, and it's Linux, it's great.
I wonder what the future of TVs is. I only saw a few snippets from CES, but I saw the big curvy screens with the super resolution, and I sort of wondered whether TVs have sort of reached the pinnacle of all they're going to achieve in the home, and how TV manufacturers are going to convince people to keep buying new TVs, because once you've got one, I still have an old CRT TV. Because things that I want to watch, I tend to do media related, I do on my computer, which has a nice screen. What technologies are there left to put into TVs once you've got one the size of your wall? But it could be, you know, that things like, I mean, I think that's why they're investigating things like re-energizing the market for network-enabled smart TVs, because that's something they see as a potential to interest people
and
in
buying a smart TV. And every couple of generations, the design changes, and you think, "Oh, my smart TV looks really dated."
it's got lots of drop shadows. I mean, as a kid growing up, we had only one television, and we had that same television until I was like 27. I went back to my mum and dad's place and said, "What are you doing?" You know? Not only that, they were renting it and then paying like £50 or £100 a year, and it's like, no, times have moved on. You can buy a TV now, and then. Subsequently, my mum's probably gone through two or three televisions in the years in between them. So,
But I think less than she would have done.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, I think there's a place for a big screen somewhere. If you know, it's not the same watching films. It's not the same social thing. No. But yes, convincing people to buy into every 5 years. If you don't have any friends, then just sit very close to your smartphone.
I have discoveries. I have things that I've found. I have objet trouvé. It's great. First thing that I found is a free font called Roboto, which we're thinking of using in Linux Voice, which is a magazine that we're making. It's under the Apache license.
Perfect.
Ben's furrowing his brow.
I'm just trying to remember what the Apache license is. I can remember now.
Sounds good though, doesn't it?
It's got loads and loads of glyphs. It comes in many, many weights. We were using DIN at first, but there'll be licensing issues with that. So robot.
Good job, someone spotted that.
Yes, thanks. That's maybe we could put you in the final panel as font advisor, font assistant,
font of wisdom,
font of yeah.
So font of knowledge.
Yeah. So that's that. That's a discovery. That's a legitimate Linux-based discovery. It's free software, so it means that if we ever need to make a change to it, we can just open it up in a font editor and, I don't know, squish the letters so that we can make headlines bigger or something. I don't know, anything. It's good having the freedom to be able to do that. And it's all thanks to open source culture.
I think it's worth giving a plug to Font Squirrel, isn't it?
Yes,
that's
site. They're just a font aggregator. They it's somebody called Robert, I think, or Robertson, who designed the font, and we should definitely give him or her a plug, and maybe send them a bottle of fine ale.
Yeah, but that is definitely a useful website for finding fonts that you want to do open sourcey type things in, because a lot of people don't realise that when you have a font that is owned by someone and isn't released under an open license, that they can demand all sorts of licenses when you do various things with the font, like
give it away for free.
Well, yes, try and print it out, or you know, all sorts of things. So that's a very useful resource.
Embed it in a website.
Yeah.
So ideally, the website, when we eventually get it running, the HTML5 app and the magazine are going to look as closely as similar as possible, and that will be possible because of this the license that this font is under. So free licenses for the win. Another awesome discovery, my mum and dad have got a new laptop. It runs Windows 8. Nobody understands how it works, but their eyes turn expectantly to me. You know about computers.
Entrepreneur.
Like, I don't really. I'm the least technical one out of us, apart from Mike. And I'm just presented with this thing running Windows 8, and I don't have a damn clue how to use it, how to install anything, how to find out where stuff is downloaded to, how to turn it off.
Did you have a flashback to like when you were little and your parents got a video recorder and couldn't understand how to
set the timer?
Yeah.
I could.
Their future shock, bewildered faces.
My usual logic is to, I mean, you can watch my dad trying to do something. He'll press the same button many times. Right. I don't know what the buttons do either, but I press different buttons or try to press the same button in a different sequence just to try, and I was reduced to that kind of level. Even though the Windows 8 UE is written in English, I didn't understand it. It's nonsense. But the reason that they bought that, it's got an i5 chip and it's got 8 gigs of RAM. It's because their old machine, the desktop, has 256 meg of RAM and a 1.1 processor, whatever, I don't know what it is, and it's running XP and God knows how many WIT viruses and stuff.
I'm not sure it makes the minimum spec to run XP.
It takes a million years to do anything,
right?
Of course.
I'm not surprised.
And they've been soldiering on with this for about 8 years.
It's a pity they didn't have a son who could advise them on things like this.
Advice, you can lead a horse to water, but if you give it advice, it'll just look at you and go, I'm a horse, I don't speak English. And then that led us to PC World. And PC World, my God, the amount of stuff that they try and sell you. Cloud storage. Do you want to buy 500 gig of cloud storage for 72 quid? No, I don't. But if you buy it now, it's half price. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to buy it, thank you very much. No, that's fine. Warranty. You can insure your laptop for, I think it was £10 a month. £10 a month. So £120 a year, or £360 for 3 years. And if it breaks after 3 years, that's the value of the laptop in the first place. Yeah. And this woman, see, this sales advisor, sales ignorance predator,
seemed baffled that I didn't want to take this option out. It's like, no, no.
Perhaps they should be legally advised to have a badge that says sales predator on
them. Our business model is upselling based on the customer's ignorance.
Yes.
It's just utterly terrible. And, you know, my dad is savvy enough to know maths and know that if something lasts for a year, it will probably last for 3 or 4 years. And you could just say, well, that's £480. That's, why would I give you that to insure an item that costs £350? And she said, oh, but it's great because if anything goes wrong, like, well, that, if I take out this insurance policy, then that something will have gone wrong because I'll have bought this stupid product that I don't need.
That I'll then pay for again over the period.
It's so just terrible. The manufacturer's guarantee runs out after a year. I said, well, I'm sure under the Sale of Goods Act, it's probably...
And the EU directive, it has to be 2 years.
Yeah.
That's what Apple got in trouble for.
He says, well, good luck with that. Like, well, yeah, good luck with that, because we'll come straight back to you. terrible, awful, evil organisation. Bad, bad people.
Actually, well, I mean... To be fair to them, practically everywhere operates on the same principles these days. In terms of, you know, if you go into shops,
well,
consumer goods, they all try to.
I would compare and contrast with the excellent off license and booze and spirits shop in Bath, Independent Spirit, where. The emphasis is not on trying to bamboozle you into buying something that you don't want, but to engage in conversation and explain. And, you know, I was in there, I sort of asked for a recommendation about whiskey. I was, you know, the fellow was talking to me for about half an hour. I left without buying anything, but thinking, you know, I'll go back there on payday. And that's the complete opposite approach. And that's the way that retail, that's the dream of retail.
But that's the liberty you have when you're a small, independent operation as opposed to some... evil corporation with its tentacles in lots of different pies.
I mean, you say that, but it's one thing you always hear about Apple stores is that people like them because they're actually good at working with you to find out what you want.
Hmm?
I've never actually been in one. I don't know if that's true or not. But they never
tell you not to buy an Apple thing, though,
no.
Do they?
they never say, so all you want to do is look at Facebook and check your emails.
I did actually have PC World on my list of finds, and I didn't read out because I thought I'd read out enough already. But I was going to give them a good review. I ordered some off their website, a printer, and it's due. And I got an SMS yesterday saying it will be delivered today. The one day in the week I'm not home to receive it. I know. But the SMS came, and it's like, if you don't reply, we'll deliver it as normal. Reply with the number 1 and we'll deliver it to your neighbour. 2, we'll deliver it on Thursday. 3, we'll deliver it on Friday. Anything else, call this number.
Wow.
So I texted back just the number 2 and got an SMS back saying, okay, the delivery is now scheduled for Thursday.
That's great. That's a huge win.
And I was like, that is so much easier.
I think Amazon do that as well now.
They have intelligent drones that can text messages.
The Amazon that I used over Christmas right. Knocked on the door, left boxes in the bin, and then ran off up the drive.
Depends which. I think it depends which courier that you use to send out your thing. So it's more a function of the courier companies rather than whoever sells you the stuff.
Okay, well, that was a super long Discovery Fortnite thing.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
That's a super extra long double-decker news and veritable super-size me discovery of the Fortnite.
find of the Fortnite.
I'm sorry, we're everybody. So bad at this. I've not had a drink since Sunday. It's really affected me. yes, that brings us to the halfway reminder, which is actually more like a 80% of the way through reminder. Still to come. We have Vocalise Your Neurons, the result of the challenge report, and Voice of the Masses. Oh, man, it's more like 60% of the way through, isn't it? This is a long podcast.
Yeah.
But now is an apposite time to remind you all, at this halfway reminder, that you can subscribe to Linux Voice at shop.linuxvoice.com. It's a magazine. It's like this podcast, but it's more professionally done. It's better. It's on paper. It's on electrons. It's on tablets. And it's great. It's not great yet, but it's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome. 50% of the profits back to the community.
Yeah.
everything's going to be released CC by SA.
And not controlled by a giant international global vampire squid.
No Wi-Fi password stored in plain text.
Yep. We shouldn't make promises we can't keep.
I'm going to break into your house.
So, Mike, any neurons to vocalise?
Nope.
Right, so that...
So, that halfway reminder actually brings us almost to the end, because we've skipped out vocalise your neurons, because there are no neurons to vocalise, and we've omitted challenge, the challenge report, because we've all failed to meet the challenge. We need to challenge ourselves to make a better challenge, and challenge ourselves to be better.
Actually, our challenge has always been to come up with a new excuse for not doing the challenge.
It's terrible. At least now we have a valid excuse. Yeah.
It's never a new excuse, though. It's always we're too busy.
We got rubbish.
Yeah.
Before we were busy watching Mexican YouTube. Now we're busy talking to HMRC about employment status and all sorts of horrible things. Anyway, that takes us to Voice of the Masses. Voice of the Masses, read out by me, Andrew Gregory. Voice of the Masses, every tedious year after year after year, the same question gets asked: is this the year of Linux on the desktop? So we thought we'd rehash this pile of leftovers, but with a new spin, with a new fresh angle, and that is the year of Linux on the desktop question still relevant? Yeah, you see what we've done there?
Yeah,
I like that.
Clever.
I think that's a good idea. Whose idea was that?
It was mine.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. And we did well when we picked Graham as the editor, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah.
Out of the available prospects, yes.
So, that's the question. Let us know your thoughts. We've had 28 thoughts on Voice of the Masses. Let me press Control F. Les W says, bored, move on. Happy New Year, though. Thanks, Les. You know what? There's not enough cynicism on the internet. There's not enough sarcasm. Not enough people taking the mick out of stuff that they're getting for free.
So, what's with all this insulting the dear listeners?
Not all, just him. Well, there's somebody else as well down there who just says, oh, this is a rubbish question.
I think they've got a point. It is a really boring question, and I've seen it come up, the whole Linux on the desktop thing, which is why it's quite funny to bring it up anyway. It's almost troll-worthy. Yeah. And I think I've seen it come up more this year than I have for a few years. Is this the year of Linux on the desktop? In other sites and us as well, which is why we took the different take on it. But yes, it's maybe he's saying in his articulate way that, you know, the question is no longer relevant anymore.
So it's a yes then?
Yeah.
That's what I would take from that response as well. He's bored of the question and bored of people talking about the question.
Maybe I need to reset my internet arsolary filters.
Yes, maybe
I should call David Cameron about that. Maybe this is just a false positive. Yeah. So Count Jocula says, I do still think it's a relevant question, or rather, it's still a relevant consideration. It's true that most cloud services and web apps are ultimately served from a Linux base, which is what you said earlier, Nick.
It is, yeah. So it must be true.
But Linux is about much more than that. As we all know, the hypothetical Windows user in the original post still has no access to a proper shell. She's still running closed source proprietary code at the very heart of her machine. She's still far more limited for choice than I am. She's still far more susceptible to viruses and malware, and she has very fewer means available to her to identify and eradicate them. Plus, the longer she insists on running Windows, the longer she's going to insist on sending me emails with docx attachments, which means that eventually I'm going to have to murder her in her sleep, is the kind of thing. Your details have been passed on to the authorities.
Without us doing anything further.
This running web apps that are actually on a Linux backend anyway, does it matter, do you think, that people are running them in a Windows client or a Linux client?
It's an interesting question, because you can extend that further. Like, never mind web apps, what about things like the GIMP or LibreOffice or Scribus or various other desktop applications, which are open source and wonderful, but will happily run on a Mac or on a Windows machine or on a Linux machine. I remember when this sort of thing started happening, some people, well, there are two camps of thought on it. Some people thought that open source software should be preserved for an open source OS because if you let anybody use it without the purity of an open source operating system, then you were sort of somehow devaluing the whole idea of an open and free environment. And some people said, well, that may be true, but on the other hand, open source, by making these things available, then more people get aware of the idea of open source. Oh, here's something that is free and open source, and I used it, and actually it's really good. It's better than this other thing that I paid money for. If this thing from open source is good, then maybe lots of other open source things are good. So I think that the idea of I think the interesting thing, though, about the web stuff is that people aren't really actually aware of the licenses involved or what have you, because it's not running on their machine, it's running somewhere else, and that sort of muddies the water somewhat as to, you know, is it open source or is it not open source, and do people actually know what they're running, and do they care?
We all use Google stuff.
Yes.
And a lot of that isn't open source.
No. And some of it is.
And some of it is. And they still, it's a company that does lots of good things and some not so good things. I mean, I used to wholeheartedly be behind the, yes, it's great if Windows users want to use free software. And that hasn't changed. But I think that something needs to be done. It's always slightly worried me, for example, that there's going to be a predicted... there's going to be 1 billion Android users in 2014, and none of them will know that they're running on Linux. Now, I don't know whether that's important or not important, but that's a question that I didn't have to worry about back 10 years ago when the desktop question seemed like the most important question to ask. And maybe that's how it's become. Should people be aware, not that it's Linux necessarily, but the reason they're able to use phones cheaply and the reason why the features are there are because it's based on Linux.
Or based on open source. Yeah. I think in more than one ways the question has become irrelevant, because I think when it was originally posed like 12, 13 years ago, the question was whether people could viably use a Linux OS as their primary means of interfacing with a computer.
Yeah.
And that question has obviously been answered without actually, you know...
But why did people want to use Linux? They wanted to use Linux because they perceived it to be freer.
So
it was freer with a capital F.
Right, yes. So you're talking about like 12 years ago.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Now... So that problem has resolved itself, let's say. But now is Android is Android free with a capital F? You can say that there's Cyanogen Mod, which is a great thing, but it's almost the same situation. In fact, it's almost a worse situation when you consider how much Google is learning about you and how much Microsoft knew about you if you wanted to move away from Windows back in 1998.
Sure.
So it's almost a worse situation, despite the fact that everybody's using Linux.
So we should cover up the fact that they're using.
No, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm kind of becoming more worried as I say each line. That it's something that I don't know what to do about it. I've always thought that Google should be obliged to say more about it being Linux, but of course that's free software. It's the license. Yeah. They don't have to.
Burgess Meredith.
I love his work.
Yeah, he loves Graham's work. Says, there's obviously loads of chatter. I mean, the story that you mentioned about desktop usage, just desktop in general usage, dropping below mobile devices. Burgess Meredith says, first off, the desktop as a platform is not dying. This is in relation to, is desktop isn't relevant anymore because the desktop is dying. It's not dying. People who point to its demise use market share statistics with mobile platforms thrown in. Yes, the desktop's market share has gone down, but only because mobile platform sales have skyrocketed.
Yeah.
And that comes back to our percentages nonsense. Overall sales numbers of desktops have not declined, they've just held steady. I'm just a home user, don't use my computer for business, but I do use my desktop for a lot more than just web browsing, so I'll always want one. Ditto for my teenage son, who has additionally gone mobile. Lots of other desktop demise. Nobody seems to think that the desktop is failing. UOOU, how do you say that? Hello, Drew. He says, yes. I can't remember.
What was the question?
Is the question still relevant?
It's yes. Here on the notes. Yes. Voice of the Matter's biggest event history project.
Despite the current post-PC narrative, the desktop PC isn't going anywhere. Tablets and phones are now the computing devices used most often by most people, of course, and PC sales have been declining for years. So that's in relevant terms, neither of which render the desktop PC obsolete.
No, well, there's always been... I didn't personally see the question about whether desktops themselves were relevant or not, because of course they are. Many people rely on them. And I suppose, relatively, in the whole scheme of computing, they are less important because more people are using mobile things. But those are people who didn't use computers a lot beforehand. So it's like a new market rather than a transition.
Completely.
I mean, definitely the desktop is still relevant. I thought the question was whether the question about whether Linux
we're in
mattered.
Enigma,
yes,
insider, shell,
yes.
etc. Glenn Homer says, I'm so sick of hearing about the year of Linux on the desktop, I could puke. What were we saying on the drive over here about Linux voice being so much more civilised than the rest of the internet?
Yeah.
But it is one of those questions, you know, and that's why it's worded in the way that it is. I think it's probably more like, I don't know, the invention of some important piece of farming equipment and whether we're asking if the invention of that...
Drill.
Yeah, is that still important? You know, it doesn't matter now.
But he is still irrelevant because he was on the old grey whistle test just a couple of days ago.
But that's what we're asking. I think that's what I think we're asking.
Richard Delaney says, Linux has reached the masses. It is not near being the dominant OS on the desktop space, but a free and open source model means that the Linux kernel is everywhere in mobile and other systems not already monopolised. Yes. Exactly what we've been saying about Android, CyanogenMod. When Ubuntu finally gets its act together on phones, that is going to be awesome. A more relevant question, continues Richard, would be, is the concept of Linux on the desktop that we clung to so dearly over the years achieved in these new environments where the kernel is used? Oh, I've read that wrong, I'm sorry. Android makes no mention of Linux, despite the kernel being literally in the hands of tens of millions of people every day. None of them are as excited as those Linux geeks when we finally got damn small Linux to boot on VirtualBox. Yes.
I love the delay on Mike's laughing. Hello, Vienna.
What are the results of the Viennese jury on this Voice of the Masters question?
We give 10 points to Germany, obviously.
That's it for SUSE then.
So is this the year of SUSE on the Viennese desktop, Mike?
The year of Susan? Like Susie Denmark?
The currency Susan. Come on, Mike. Think about the context of what's just been said before.
Are you in the bathroom, by the way?
I do tell people. I wonder how much of this will be edited out.
Not very much.
Not the bits that you think.
Sorry, Mike.
Wait, you want me to...
We want you to contribute to this lively and informative debate.
I do tell people that people who are running Android phones that they are actually running Linux, because usually they have no idea what Linux is. So it does sort of help them to understand what's going on. You say, well, all that stuff running on your phone with the icons and the software and stuff, that is Linux. So when people say, what are you writing about? What exactly is your magazine about? Then, yeah, it helps people to understand.
I think in some ways, yeah, you're right. Linux could do with more visibility. I always think about how much visibility Windows gets, because every time I get the park and ride bus into town in Bath, I sit on the top deck and I stare at this screen along with all the other passengers that says, Windows has failed to boot, please press what have you to reset your machine. I think all these people know about Windows. They know that Windows is running this broken system. So there you go.
So you need Linux to crash more often. So on your Android phone, it's loading Linux kernel.
Two very good points, and crucially quite short points. A lot of very, very good points that are just a bit too long to go into in the recorded voice format. But if you're just if you're at large on the internet, do please go to linuxvoice.com and have a look at the comments that people have left on here, because as always, it's a mixture of just really clever things and really insightful things and really funny things, and the two people who've just let the side down. But Rob Adonato says...
Three people that let the
side. Rob Adonato says, the only people who care about hardware form factors are manufacturers. The keyboard and mouse inputs will continue to be a dominant method of getting real work done for a while to come. The reality of writing articles and books, programming, CAD and 3D will need a keyboard and a place to sit or stand for decades to come. And only Linux and the BSDs appear to be able to adapt fluidly through these use cases. Yes. Or unify or converge. Steve says, yeah, I think the question is still relevant, but perhaps not as we would have imagined even a brief period of time ago. Sure, a lot of consumer tech is now small portable units rather than a PC on a wobbly desk in the corner, but we still have laptops, and the offices are going to be using PCs and laptops for a good while yet. So, here is the point. Perhaps it's not when, more like where.
So, what does that make the question then?
It means the question is not when is the year of Linux on the desktop, but where is the year of Linux on the desktop? Like, it's the year of Linux on the desktop in here, in Linux Voice Towers, is now, because we're all using it on our phones and our laptops and the desktop machine that's upstairs. But in other places, the year of Linux on the desktop
the hasn't
arrived. And the arcade machine. In Munich City Council, the year of Linux on the desktop is right now. But in backward Stuttgart City Council, I imagine they're still stuck with Windows 7. Is that right, Mike?
I don't know. We'll have to go and investigate that.
Yeah,
it's been several weeks. Traveling
around. Why don't you break in and see if you can get access to their Wi-Fi passwords while you're there?
Right, I think we've probably taken up as much of the internet as we can reasonably allow now, so...
Yeah. I think as a final thought that I just had at the end there, that you could replace Linux on the... At the time, Linux on the desktop seemed like the most important thing.
Yeah.
So you can replace that, make that a variable, and say, is this the year of Linux doing the most significant thing that computers are doing? And that probably happened years ago.
That probably happens, like, practically every year, although I think quite a lot of the time Linux is doing the things that... people don't even realize are important yet until they become important, and then realize that Linux was doing them all along.
Yeah. Things like open source and security and NSA surveillance and all that kind of stuff. I think that now is making Linux very important.
Cloud hosting, teaching Raspberry Pi, coding in schools, supercomputers, human genome, SETI, Jodrell Bank, MicOS is used in all of these.
I was just thinking, now that they've replaced Windows with Debian on the laptops in the International Space Station, does that make the surface of the planet Earth the only place in the known universe where Windows is the dominant desktop OS?
Let's say yes.
Yeah. Right, that's pretty much the end of the podcast now.
Yeah, 1 hour, 20 minutes in.
So that brings us to the end of the podcast, and we will see you all again in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.